Miss Yashuka was right. You can see the resemblance.
Think so? I'm not so sure of that, really. I don't think he's quite so good looking. Why don't we shave the beard off, just to make sure?
The beard is mine. I'm attached to it. I want it to remain right there. And furthermore, I'd like to know what's going on here.
I'm Cunningham, of Allied Counter-Espionage for Western Europe. This is Miss Maxwell, my assistant. You're the brother of our top agent, so I think we can trust you.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
I want to speak with London, please. It's terribly urgent.
London in England? How do you expect to do that?
On the telephone. Please help me. It's a matter of life or death.
You can try. I don't know if you'll get through.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop. And with me today, as always, is Sam Stepanenko.
I am not talking to you. I am so not talking to you right now. I hated this movie. Okay, I'll talk to you.
Did I call that one, Jeff? I had texted Jeff just a few days ago, and I said, at the time I didn't know Jeff had actually seen the movie, but I said, you're going to love this. I don't know if you did or not. I said, Sam's going to hate it, and Trish could go either way. And I freaking loved it. So what was your standing on it, Jeff Omega? I can't remember if you loved it, hated it, or were somewhere in between.
You know what? I think it was a movie where, I mean, obviously, it's
just
not
a yes
good.
Or just a good. Did you enjoy it? Did you not enjoy it?
I would say that I enjoyed moments of it a lot.
Okay, well, I didn't call it on your end then.
I think that the bulk of it was like your standard, super, you know, boring Italian fare. But
Trish. Welcome to the show, Trish Coughlin.
Hello, everybody. I enjoyed it because I saw it through the lens of it is a comedy movie that doesn't know it's a comedy movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't sure with the very overt exploitation overtones from it. I mean, it is 1967. It is an exploitation film to some extent. So I wasn't sure how you would feel something like that. But I mean, that exploitation's very prevalent just in the Bond franchise. So
it is. Yeah. But I figured out a way to have fun with it that when you talk about the exploitation, we can get into it later, but there was a show that was done here in Calgary called Kung Fu Panties. And it was really good, but it does, like, they do have fun with a whole point where it's like going, just the exploitativeness is what female spies can use to get ahead.
Mm-hmm. And they do.
It was really good. So when I kind of figured it, like, if I looked at it like that, it's like, oh yeah, no, they know what they're doing. And plus, using feather boas in a fight is amazing. It should be done more often.
I agree. That was actually one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie.
Yes.
And I beg to differ on, I mean, I think it was an exploitation film, but I don't think that it was exploitive in the way that you're sort of suggesting, Jim.
This is a very much a Euro spy parody, and those elements are in Bond with the sexy girls and whatnot, but I mean, it was like within the first 5 minutes I'm like, wow, this guy who's clearly meant to be Largo from Thunderball, because it's the same guy, he's got women all over the place with their crop tops and sailor outfits and
well, yeah, but they're also extremely competent, right? They're not just eye candy or
what, the wide lion
objects
on the table
also,
that he was just patting on her
just,
stomach.
They were also competent fighters. The lead Maya, that's her name, sorry. She was extremely competent. I mean, there's a balance there that's actually sadly missing in most of the Bond films.
Yeah, you're probably right there. So let me tell you how this came up, because I wanted to do a Bond film, but we've done the Bond films that have been remade, so I'm like, well, shit, where does that lend me to go? Where can I go? And yeah, one of my customers, John, who's actually responsible for Paint Your Wagon, that particular episode, he'll throw some weird shit at me, and when he said, yeah, this is basically a James Bond movie without them being able to use the names from James Bond, and there's a ton of people from James Bond movies in this, and you're just missing Sean Connery. And what happens when you can't get Sean Connery? You get his little brother. Oh my. So, yeah, this was kind of crazy because Neil Connery, not an actor. And when he went to shoot this in Italy they don't shoot with sound for the most part. So, you know, you're going through your motions and you're saying your lines and then they sync it up later. But when they did the audio dubbing for the English audience, Neil was no longer available. So he had some sort of medical issue, from my understanding it was appendicitis, and couldn't record his lines. So they had an American record over him, which just adds to the fun because they often mention that he's Scottish and they often mention his brother. Not and, by name.
Yeah, but this also goes into the whole point of the dubbing part of it, because one of his very special skills is lip reading. And in a movie with bad dubbing, lip reading is just hilarious.
He's definitely a brother of James Bond because he's good at everything. He's a plastic. I mean, as you do, this guy's mastering multiple disciplines, including lip reading. He's a plastic surgeon. He's a hypnotist. And he's a top archer.
Yeah.
Oh, and don't forget he's mastered a martial art where he can kill somebody with one blow.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. I knew I was in for a great ride about 15 minutes in when he stops mid-fight to hypnotize somebody before he punches them.
Yes.
I was like, this is amazing.
You know, and there's two lines in the movie where, like, they're basically right out of Police Squad, which, I mean, obviously came 30 years later. Mm-hmm. But there was the one from that scene where somebody was just like, oh, pardon me, doctor, I really thought I was whispering. He's like, actually, it's my fault. I didn't hear you, but I'm capable of lip reading. Yeah. Which is like such a great non sequitur. And then the other one where he was like, that's her. I knew her extremely well. I've operated on her face.
Right?
Oh, the lines are amazing.
There's some fun in this movie. I mean, I mean, as much as I didn't like it, I mean, there are moments that I really did enjoy, and you've hit two of the few.
Yeah, if you could just
enjoy.
When I got to that fight, and I'm like, okay, so that's what I'm in for.
Yeah,
that's because there wasn't a lot of dialogue in those first 15 minutes. I'm like,
There was no dialogue in the first 15 minutes,
and not a lot
I'm watching
of it.
Going, oh,
yeah, not a lot of it was coming together. Not a lot of it makes sense as you're watching it.
Oh, and they start off at the point where they have Thayer, who's in his special boat with all the women, surrounded by women, at one point watching something, and his screen is the back of a woman. And the entire time I keep thinking, like, she's a bad screen. I am the optimal screen. I have a very pale back and a lot more surface area. You don't want a thin, tan lady for that. It doesn't work.
Well, I think somebody saw the intro to one of those Bond movies, because I think they did do that, where they were projecting stuff onto half-naked women. But that was through for the intro, their artsy-fartsy intro with the women.
Yeah.
And so they probably were like, well, we need to do that for just... Why? I don't know.
I don't know. No, but
just because he didn't want to sully his wall with light? I don't know.
Right? Just get a larger, paler woman. It would make more sense. In fact, in this movie, I want to play that part. I am perfect for it.
You just need a ginger.
I lay on my side. You could do widescreen. It would work perfectly.
Oh,
so frustrated.
Speaking of exploiting, it's like, wow, Trish is actually saying, please exploit me.
No, I'm just saying, if you're going to do it, fucking do it right.
Is she saying, please exploit me while being self-deprecating at the same time?
Well, the whole point is like, no, it's not even really exploit me. It's sort of like going, no, a larger woman, we have some very special skills.
Oh, so no, you're arguing for inclusion then?
Yeah, at least give us a chance.
Okay.
I guess it is. I mean, if you want a better screen and a bigger screen, you're going to need more surface area.
Well, absolutely.
I totally get what you're saying.
Thank you. And I mean, even if you want to do like a front one, there's a lot of interesting stuff that could happen. The big boobs will really just make a very interesting screen, but we won't do that in this one. It'll just be my back.
Oh, that would warp the image. That would be...
I know. It would warp the image in the funnest way.
Yeah, we have an Italian Bond movie here with O.K. Connery from 1967, a.k.a. the Operation Kid Brother in the States, also known as Operation Double O, and several other names, because every time they tried to try something that was a little too Bondy, they got sued. Or cease and desist. I doubt they had much money. But you know,
I don't know about that.
Well, they had a pretty decent budget. I'd say this was fairly equal to probably Dr. No as far as budget-wise, just not as well executed. But they had some money. It was very successful in Italy. So,
well, Lois Maxwell said that she made more money doing this film than she made on all the Bond films combined.
Wow. Yeah, which is crazy. So I never did find out what the budget was, but they had some money to throw around to get these actors in the first place. Because I couldn't help but thinking, like, when you think about how people will spend a lot of money to make a Star Trek fan film or a Marvel fan film or whatever. And that's what this kind of felt like in 1967, except there was no such thing as a fan film because there was no YouTube or anything like that. Alternate distribution. You either made the movie and put it out or you didn't.
Yeah.
So this was a movie that was clearly them trying to make James Bond while trying to not cross the copyright laws.
And I think they deviated just, well, more than enough to avoid that, because this is has the elements of a Bond film, but is clearly not a Bond film.
Yeah, no, they did enough to change names. Spectre's now Thanatos. I mean, structurally, it's exactly the same.
You have your
Blofeld character, and then you have your next guy down, who's usually the main foil of a Bond villain. You have MI6 from the James Bond movie, so you have M in this movie. You have Moneypenny. It's the only thing missing was Q.
Yeah, I was actually hoping for some of that. I think that would have moved it from, ooh, I don't like this, to, oh, this is okay.
Other than possibly the worst invention in any spy movie, the belt that can be turned into a spear.
Yes. She had a gun. That's what drove me the most nuts. She walked out of that shed with a gun and then made a belt spear. But the one thing they did here that I really kind of enjoyed as like just an interesting idea is in the super secret cabal that's sort of doing this big operation, there is somebody trying to usurp power, which would make more sense. And it doesn't happen as often, I don't think, in other films like this.
Yeah, I did like that there was that internal struggle and power struggle happening within Thanatos.
I did like some of the story elements as well. Like I like that aspect of it. I like the sort of conceit of the super electromagnet and the, it's cheesy as shit, but it's fun, right? It was actually a fun idea, even though it's clearly ridiculous. And that's maybe why it was so much fun. But
yeah, they were trying to steal an atomic nucleus so they could basically create a giant EMP without knowing what EMPs actually do.
Yeah. But what I liked was when they had their shutdown, how they moved to the non-technological weapons to, I thought that was actually really well thought out, that part of it.
Oh, I didn't, because they clearly don't know how guns work. Why weren't the guns working? Yeah.
Because they're metal.
It stops metal from working?
Yes.
I don't think this was an EMP thing.
No, it was
a
magnetic field.
I think anything metal was going to be, the magnets would stop it from functioning or any moving parts in it.
That's right. They explained it. Actually, they actually explained it in the movie.
Yeah, but it makes no sense.
It doesn't have to make sense, Jay. It's a movie.
Doesn't.
It's a bad movie on top of it all. It has to make no sense.
A gun has several moving parts in order to shoot, so... It
metal
wouldn't
parts.
Work.
Yeah, I treated it more as like electromagnetic pulse, because the technology, sure, you know, phone lines and solenoids and cars, whatever, lots of things would stop functioning. But metal? Yeah, there's some small parts in there, but it's all physics that operate a gun. So it didn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. I'm like, what? I just accepted it. I thought it was hilarious. But
like, you clearly don't know. If the end of the bullet, it won't go.
Yeah, because they did explain that it would like cause metal parts to stop moving.
Yeah, they explained it. It still didn't make any kind of actual sense.
Oh, no.
Of course not, no.
Like, they would not work that way.
No, no, and I'm not saying they would, right? But at least they explained, they tried to explain it, maybe is a better way of putting it, so that when the ending happened, it did make sense in context with their explanation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, it would be, like, I think if you were to do this again, it'd be like, no, it's an like, using the Earth's core as an ultramagnet, which mm-hmm. would stop any metal from moving from where it was.
Which means
like,
then it should
just be stuck to the ground.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It should be stuck to the ground, including their fucking makeshift spears and anything else.
Absolutely.
Like, so that I would have loved to have seen. I think that would have been actually just as hilarious. But
yes,
like, some kind of sense. We can,
there
hey,
we
let's
go.
Let's incorporate that into our remake. I assume we're making a comedy still. I don't know.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh, the other comedic element that I loved was every time Mildred showed up, she's like rummaging around the bushes or somewhere for something she's lost.
I have the perfect casting for that.
I didn't
based on what she was doing every time Neil Connery found her.
I have the perfect objects because I want them to be more and more absurd. Oh, I've lost my cloned baby black rhino. I've lost the cast of Riverdale. I've lost all this absurd stuff.
No. Haven't you been watching Riverdale? Only Archie's missing right now.
Oh. Okay, that's Archie from Riverdale. There we go.
Yeah, no, we could have a lot of fun with it. Because I was thinking this would be very much in a Police Squad type of Naked Gun kind of comedy, where you still have a good plot, it's still enjoyable as it is, but there's lots of weird comedy going on along the way.
And do you think, now that would be obviously the better version of this movie,
yeah,
but do you think that if it was actually to be remade, that it would be something that like the Asylum would just try to do as their version of
yeah,
the new James Bond movie
they
coming
do,
out?
They wouldn't do it well,
but I think could make it star Harry Craig.
I do. That's funny, because I was looking to see here, like, how do I figure out which relatives that these people have that aren't in the world, aren't working?
Like, Harry Craig is, I guess, a racetrack bartender / alternative model who's Daniel Craig's half-brother.
That's amazing. I wish I would have known that, because that would have been totally my casting. No, I think a lot of why this movie works is that they've paled a lot of people from Bond to try to make this legitimate as possible.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to run the trailer here because I do want to tell you who those people are. So I'm going to run the trailer. There's not much to it. And then we'll get back into talking about Operation Kid Brother / OK Connery from 1967.
Neil Connery is too much. Such beautiful enemies.
Anyone can see.
watch in Operation Kid Brother. Operation Kid Brother is too much for one mother.
Okay, yeah, even the music's weird.
You know, I was surprised there was a co-credit with Ennio Morricone.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah. The fact that it took them years to even release anything. They didn't even release a soundtrack until many, many years later. And I think they only released the OK Connery theme song.
As a 45.
Yes. OK Connery. Amazing. Amazing. This story, if you can call it that, and screenplay was written by Paolo Levi. The screenplay was also written by Frank Walker, Stanley Wright, and Stefano Canzio. This is directed by Alberto De Martino, who directed a movie just called Horror, Bloodlink, and The Miami Golem. All of these sound like amazing titles, by the way.
Yes. I was going to say, those sound like fun titles. After seeing this movie, I'm not sure about the movies, but...
Yeah, right. I was desperately hoping there would be a tie back to Trinity, because we haven't really done an Italian movie since then.
Me too. I was actually going, okay, please let there be a Trinity connection. Please let... And then it wasn't.
I did find one to Terrence Hill, though. We'll get there in the end. So this...
I know which one you found, yeah.
This stars Neil Connery as... Very cleverly named Dr. Neil Connery.
That's because he couldn't remember his fake name. They just started calling him Neil Connery. They even called the movie OK Connery because they when he was auditioning, they kept saying OK Connery, OK Connery. So they just named the movie that.
Yeah. Even they knew they were making trash. He actually hasn't been in a whole lot, but he was in such gems as The Body Stealers and Mad Mission 3. Which maybe we'll cover at some point, because that was like a Chinese version of this.
Is The Body Stealers a Body Snatchers?
Yeah, something like that. I assume so. I didn't do a lot of research into what those movies were. I figured out I would have fun on my own later.
Okay.
Daniela Bianchi was Maya Raffis, a gorgeous woman. She was like... The head henchwoman that it would be in any Bond movie that kind of gets swayed by Bond into working for the good guys. And she was in From Russia with Love as Tatiana Romaninov. So thus begins our connective tissue to many Bond films here. Adolfo Celli was Mr. Thayer, otherwise known as Beta, from Thanatos. He was in Thunderball as Largo, and we talked about Largo in episode 34, which was Thunderball.
Yes, we did.
So that was one of the Bond movies we did get to talk about on this show, and everybody knows at this point I'm a huge Bond mark. Agata Flori was Mildred, and yeah, she was the one constantly picking up stuff. She was in not problematic at all title of Tarzan and the Brown Prince. Yeah. Bernard Lee, otherwise known as M in most of the Bond movies, he was M from Dr. No up to Moonraker. And he plays a similar character of Commander Cunningham in this movie. Anthony Dawson was Alpha, and he's been in, I think, two or three Bond movies. He played a different character in one Bond movie, but he was in Thunderball and From Russia to Love as Blofeld, but... Back in those days, we only saw like the back of Blofeld's head at the best of times, or just his hands stroking a cat.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was Blofeld, and he plays a similar character here as Alpha. Lois Maxwell obviously was very famous for being Miss Moneypenny in most of the Bond movies, from Dr. No all the way up to A View to a Kill, and she plays Max, or Maxwell, Miss Maxwell, so she got her own name in this movie as well. Ziwang Yang was Yoshiko, and she was in You Only Live Twice, which I think was after this movie, so she did wind up getting her Bond connection. Franco Ciaboni was Juan, and he was in, I love this one, Hercules in the Haunted World.
Oh!
Right? Doesn't that sound intriguing? That sounds amazing. Anna Marie Noah was in a movie called Kill or Be Killed. She plays Lotta Kayendorf. She looks very similar, and she's meant to be a similar character to Lotta Lenya from Russia to Love, who is Kleb, the one with the knife in the shoe.
Or
she looks so similar. She looks so similar that I thought like that was the same person. I had to like do a double take because they look so similar.
Yeah, she looked very similar, but I think she's also the model for like Frau Farbissima from Austin Powers.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Guido Lolo Brigida was Kurtz, and he was in Django Sees Red, which stars Terrence Hill, which is our connection back to our Trinity episode.
Oh, that's not the one I thought, Jake, because somebody else was in Boot Hill, which is also a Terrence Hill film.
Oh, there you go. Well, see, there was inevitably going to be some ties back to Terrence Hill somehow. And I just wanted to mention, even though I don't think she appears in the film, she was probably cut, Margarita Horowitz has a credit in this film, but it just says credit only on IMDb, but she actually was in episode 177, Suspiria. Yeah.
Oh.
So probably cool. One of the dancers in that movie, but I mean, yeah, Italian film is some are actually bound to be in some good ones.
Absolutely.
Even accidentally. It's good. That means she got paid and didn't have to actually be connected.
Nice. So that's the dream.
She was the lucky one.
Yeah, she really was.
So yeah, let's dig into this. We have a mysterious organization of Thanatos, the Spectre, if you will, and they are trying to retrieve Yashuko, who basically is a human hard drive. This other spy,
USB.
Yeah, this other spy Ward had hypnotically implanted all this information in her that she didn't know she had. So these bad guys are trying to get this information from her, which I guess is the secrets to making this nonsensical EMP thing.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you've got dissension in the ranks over on Thanatos as well.
And this came out before Star Wars, so every time they said Tetuan, I'm like, what? Don't they mean Tatooine?
Don't you mean
Tatooine? I'm very confused.
Tatooine. And then the rest is really absurd because Yashuko had been operated on by Dr. Neil Connery, had some plastic surgery done, so he's intimately familiar with her. There is a weird little subplot at one point. Beta tries to get Neil Connery to work for him to make a double of himself. It actually starts mirroring the Thunderball a little bit. Some plot points in Thunderball where they do wind up making a double of an agent to steal that spy plane. They seemed like they were heading there, and then it just fell apart when Neil's like, no, I'm not doing that. He didn't want to do any of it, to be honest. Every time he's getting recruited, they have to blackmail him to do it.
And I liked that. He's an unwilling participant in all of it. That was, one of the things that I did like, is just he felt overly competent for somebody who was an unwilling participant.
Also for somebody who's supposed to be a civilian as well.
Well, he was the brother of their best spy. They kept saying,
"Yeah, and
there must be at least some sort of competitive nature."
Yeah, the lead up to that really hokey plane crash was so long.
Mm-hmm. I mean, really, the movie itself was very long.
I mean, it was only an hour and 41 minutes, but it did feel longer. I think it's because the way they tied things in together, like the scenes between the scenes, were sometimes a little slow pacing. That's what made it feel a little bit longer. I mean, there's lots to like in this film. It's just the way it tied together just completely turned me off.
Oh, none of the scenes really tie very well together at all. The transitions were horrible.
Okay, let's talk about the elephant in the room. When they get off the plane and there's all those people dancing outside the airport. I know it was somebody's wedding, but that was funny. And that was very Naked Gun to me, is all these people just dancing outside the airport.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of it that made me think of Police Squad and Naked Gun in a lot of strange ways. Like, I feel like you start to watch some of these older movies, and then you realize some of this, you know, quirky sense of humor is them trying to recreate the humor that's arrived at by accident.
Yeah, well, we talk about that fairly in depth when we did Zero Hour, comparing it to Airplane, which literally did do that. They took this very serious Airplane disaster scenario and turned it into a comedy because there were such over-the-top moments within Zero Hour. And I feel like that's the model, like, pull from this one. I'm still not sure if they were trying to make a serious spy movie or a comedy. There are times where I'm like, oh, maybe they are making a comedy.
It's Italian, though.
Yeah. I mean, there are those comedic moments because there's the – and I'm not sure which character it was, to be honest with you, but there's one character who shows up a couple times. First time is at that airport where it's his wedding day and he gets pulled away from his own wedding.
One. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that is one. Okay. Yeah. And then later on he shows up again and they're pulling away from his honeymoon.
Yes.
And I thought that was funny. Like that, and that was quite clearly deliberately funny.
Yeah. I was trying to think too, like how much – like you could see where the comedic moments, the intentional ones were. And they didn't seem any more ridiculous than what would have been in a Roger Moore movie, which in itself was almost a parody of what they were doing. But then there'd be the stuff where you're like, okay, I don't think they meant that to be funny.
Oh, like the scene where they turned the army truck into a traveling casino?
Yes. Which I have to say, the one woman riding on the side, if they pull a turn a little too fast, she's dead. Not good.
Yeah, but yeah, no, that was like absurdity at its finest, especially the whole thing where they're putting it on, they're just putting holding pieces up to the truck and then all of a sudden it's magically a rolling casino. A groaner moment for me.
It's Blazing Saddles is what reminded me of.
That's very Blazing Saddles, actually. That's a really good comparison.
But there was another part where I don't think it was meant to be comedic, but it really did end up where Dr. Connery called his like archery buddies to come meet him somewhere. And they're like, so what are we going to do, dude? And he's like, oh, well, I'll leave you a message at the hotel. Okay, we'll see you later. Like just, and then they come and then like, I think they're just his archery club, but then he takes them out to go start killing people. Like it seems like in our remake, I see this as a Robin Hood LARPing club. And yeah. That's just what they're doing.
Yeah, like, why were they all dressed in the same outfits? Like, why did they all look like Robin Hood from a Disney cartoon? But yes. Why did the sailors look like that, too? Like, there was some really weird costuming choices. And they were choices.
I have to say, Maya's, like, regular outfits, a lot of them I actually freaking loved.
Did you notice how they kept her color scheme for every outfit?
Yes.
I love that. I thought that was great.
That yellow.
So good.
Yeah.
The orange with the white. Yeah, yeah, no, I thought that was great that every outfit had that color theme. I mean, that was a really great attention to detail that was missing in the rest of the movie, unfortunately.
I mean, there's a lot of color flying around in this movie, yeah. But sometimes they're careful with it. Even when she's doing some villainous things at the beginning, you don't think like she's as bad as everybody else.
No.
No, she's kind of like, this is just a job.
Yeah. And she oftentimes, she's often helping and flirting with Connery right off the outset. Initially, I was thinking, well, maybe she's just hedging her bets because she doesn't have a lot of faith in Mildred to get the job done, to get to Yoshiko. And maybe I think that was what the original intent was. And then, much like every Bond girl, just fall in love with the leading man, right?
Well, no. See, this is where I kind of disagree. Is there... She does like him, but he does tell her that like she's going to get blown up on a boat. Yeah. So when she comes over to his side, it's very self-preservation. It's not this magical dick that transforms.
Well, that's
her,
true.
Which always bothered me about the fucking Bond films.
Yeah, not so much overhears, but watches the lip syncing happening.
Yes.
And basically learns that Beta is planning to betray her and all of her women that work underneath her. So... okay. Which is why they all change sides.
Oh, you just reminded me of something that really annoyed me. is the fact that he makes this plan to kill everybody who knows about his plan. Mm-hmm. And then when he does it, everybody fucking knows. Like, like they're actually involved in it. So it's like, why all the secrecy if they already know?
Oh, he's going to kill us. Well, that sucks. But my mom will get all that money, right? Like, I don't know why anybody's sticking around. I noticed his house, like, at the beginning of the movie was filled with all of the women. And at the end, it was all male agents that were working for him. Yeah. And all the women
in turn. Terrible outfits.
Yes.
Those red leather, whatever they were.
Oh, my God. Did anybody else think that was the inspiration for Michael Jackson's Thriller outfit?
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was like...
No, but now I do.
Oh, I could not unsee it. It was like right away, and I'm like, oh, the Beta uniforms from the Michael Jackson Thriller thing. I just wanted everybody to break out into a dance routine. I would have made my day.
Well, we're putting that in.
Okay.
Now we are.
I like a dance routine out of nowhere. I don't know why.
Yes.
I liked it in Gamer, Kung Fu Hustle. Yeah.
Oh, And the Robin Hood guys have to do a dance as well. We are the merry men.
Oh,
you have to do like a West Side Story type thing.
Oh, yeah. In those outfits, you gotta. If we're keeping those outfits, you gotta do it.
Yeah. Yeah, like the final fight can be almost like a dance-off.
Yes.
Because none of their guns will work. All of the metals like sticking to the ground.
By the way, I did love that the final showdown was both of them just aiming bow and arrows at each other and then just shooting each other at the same time. Like, it was anticlimactic, but in a low-key hilarious way.
Well, and the thing is, they do set that up. There's these odd pieces of attention to detail that sort of shine, like, because they set that up when they meet at the archery tournament and how he explains how he's an amateur. So it does set up that ending really well, but it's one of the few things that is done really well in this film.
This whole movie is so, I mean, I think that it's basically, I wouldn't say that it's bad, like, through and through, like, it's pretty watchable, but I'd say that ultimately where it fails is it's more forgettable than anything outside of a couple, like, non sequiturs, essentially.
Well, and you might be right, because I have a feeling I'd seen this movie before, like, most of it wasn't very familiar to me, except when Lada gets Yoshiko from the hospital, like, and shoots her out this window through this zip line into the ambulance, and I'm like, fuck, I remember this. And this is probably
to me, that was actually quite well done.
Well, I thought it was silly, but I mean, it should be silly, but at the same time, I'm like, well, okay. I just kind of accepted it. By that point, I was in. I'm like, whatever lunacy you're going to throw at me, I'm ready for it. I am so ready for it. And it's that kind of stuff. Like, I just want to keep all that stuff in because it's so silly. Like, I don't even want to change this too much. Just intentionally lean into the funny.
Yeah, just lean into it just a little bit more. And that's where I was thinking is if you lean into the funny a little bit more and clean up some of the transitions and just sort of make the story just a little tighter,
yeah,
I think it could be a fun movie.
Yeah, and I want to embrace more dialogue like this. I need to call London. How do you expect to do that? On the telephone. That was, and that's in this movie.
Yes, it is.
That is in this movie. I'm like, I want more shit like that.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I think that it would probably, I mean, if you were to do it as a comedy, it would have to be a period piece, right?
Not necessarily, but I think you'd want to keep it within the classic Bond era where this stuff was kind of looked like this. And I think that would just add to its look. And because I think the colors of this were really wonderful. But at the same time, we've got this movie. You don't have to do it that way. And I'd like to maybe add more gadgets just so I could put Q in the movie. AQ, whatever we call them.
Yeah, no, I like that.
He's still Q, but it's like C-U-E. Yeah.
No, it's called Zed.
If I was to do like a story tweak in a remake, I would probably have it be he's Sean Connery's brother, but the same plot otherwise. And his name is still Neil Connery.
Well, we could change whatever names we want, but I liked the idea of making our lead not look like a handsome guy, but everybody thinks he looks exactly the same. Like, if we're going with Daniel Craig or somebody who could make a cameo in this one, everybody thinks they're uncanny and they don't look alike at all.
Oh, yeah. No,
he looks completely inept, but he's actually really good at stuff.
Well, I changed a lot with my lead, and it's like it's an adoptive sibling.
Right.
They don't look alike.
I want to go back to Q real quick because I just had an idea.
Okay.
Okay.
We call him you because then you keep going, hey, you.
That's good.
Yeah, I like that. That's good. You is it.
Oh, I like that too. And then he's like, people just don't really just call me by my name. They just say, hey, you. It's so dismissive. I want Q. And Q is just sad.
You is always, depressed because he thinks he's always being dismissed. Yeah.
He's depressed because he puts in all this work and none of his gadgets make it back. Like, he's like, he just disposes of them. I do all this work and it's for nothing.
You know, you could have some sort of absurd plot where it's just, you know, all of his enemies have just been collecting the gadgetry that he disposes of and then, you know, are able to put it together to make some sort of technology on their end.
Or selling it on eBay. Something like that.
That's nice. I like that.
Yeah,
that's how they've been funding their organization, is by selling all these gadgets these secret agents leave around.
Specifically the one that dies at the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like the guiltiest party of them
That's
all.
What they were stealing. That little box that we never see what's inside of it that they steal. It's like, what's in the box? What's in the box? It's something they're going to throw on eBay.
Yes.
or whatever they call the villainous version of eBay.
Yeah, it's got to be a specialized eBay, not regular eBay like Spy Bay or...
Oh, Spy Bay. Yeah.
Spy Gigi.
Yeah, some sort of underground thing. I mean, I guess we do have that, the Silk Road and the dark web and stuff, but we got to keep it funny.
Doesn't in the Master of Disguise, like, they're stealing all of these great works of art. Don't they sell it on eBay? But it's something like, it just says black market eBay, but it's the same page otherwise. It's been a while since I've seen that movie, but yeah, that's a hilarious idea.
Oh, I know. It's just evil eBay. Just evil eBay.
It's EVL Bay, because you can't just spell it right.
Of course not.
I like it.
Yeah, evil Bay.
Yeah.
eBay, this time the E stands for evil.
I could just see that in their advertising.
Yeah. Oh, you could have so much fun. You could have like an ad at the beginning of like a YouTube video just doing that. This time the E stands for evil. Oh.
Well, that's how I feel about YouTube now, so that would be proper advertising.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I went there, Jay.
I appreciate it. I totally appreciate it.
Yeah, no, and I think if we lean into the well, now we've kind of moved it to present because of all the websites and stuff.
Oh, I guess we have. But that's a great thing. Like, you can still do it modern and keep it ambiguous. Like, you can make it look 70s but still be modern. Makes it
that's the fun of parody, right?
Yeah, that's the fun of parody, because I love how ridiculous some of those old Bond gadgets actually look because of just the datedness of it all. Yeah. And to still do these high-tech gadgets and then have somebody tapping on their iPhone and this thing looks so low-tech next to this guy's iPhone, like that itself, in and of itself, is a joke.
Well, have it, and you could explain it where, like, you know, when she's in the car and she's talking to him and he's got this giant phone. Got this little microphone that she's just talking into her car. Like, the whole idea could be like, well, these aren't hackable by today's standards, so we just kept it.
Well, and there's also the whole like idea of like, you know, I always think about the time tunnel from TV's The Time Tunnel, where it's like just a giant hallway with a circular thing in it that they run down, but it's connected to a computer that the computer is the size of the whole room, but it's this whole idea of that the end result is more advanced than anything we have today, but what we have today looks more advanced but can do less.
Oh, see, I imagine this is, it's a big giant computer time tunnel. They open a cabinet door and it's just a tiny USB plugged in. Boop. I've disabled the whole thing, Bond.
Oh man, that would be great, because they had this cavernous lair for some reason, because every evil plan has to happen in a cavernous lair. So to get on this tram system all the way to the high tech stuff for the villains, but they've had this for so long that they've upgraded it, so we still have the long tram system, but it is just a little desktop in a big fucking room. And some guy with glasses named Herb.
Oh, and they've just started using it for storage.
Yeah,
like there's a bunch of cabinets.
Yeah,
and you have a fun joke with that where they forget that it won't work when they turn on their magnet. And they have to walk up like all these steps.
God damn it.
That's actually
how much further.
Turn it off! Turn it off! Wait till we get back up.
I don't care if I die. I just—it's too hard.
I mean, and we get turned on that magnet, and then people's fillings are flying out of their face, and that could be fun.
Yes.
People with those metal hips are now stuck to the ground.
Why didn't you set the countdown for 10 minutes? We need more time.
God damn it, Herb. Too funny. Yeah, I think we got something pretty fun there if we just lean into it. Shall we get into some casting? As I'm sure some more ideas will come along the way.
Sure. My casting does not lean at all into parody, which is fine.
That's fine. That's fine. Let's start
actually,
with
yours. Actually, it might. Okay. And I know I was lazy with my casting. I'm not going to lie, because I was really, really disappointed when I watched this movie. Now I'm having more fun. So I know he can do comedy because he's done it. I went with Tom Hardy as the Neil Connery role just because he has that kind of look. And because he hasn't gotten to play Bond, why not go with that?
Well, and I think, nice. You know, if you lean in, like you use serious actors in a situation of comedy, I think that just kind of adds some of the legitimacy to it. And some of these guys will be happy to do it because they never get to do it.
Exactly. And like I said, you could see that Tom Hardy was enjoying it when he was doing Venom. He was enjoying leaning into that comedy part of it, maybe to the detriment of the film, but it was still fun. Mm. For Maya, I went with Emily Blunt.
Nice. I actually thought about her.
Yeah, because I know she can lean into the comedy. Actually, she's quite good at comedy. I wanted her to have action, and I know she can do that too. For my Mr. Ty, however you say his name, slash Beta, I went with Jason Isaacs because he can do menacing really, really well. And I think that if he like really leaned into it with over the top evil,
he's
I think
not
he'd
afraid
be a lot
of comedy either. But yeah, he'd be a great villain.
And actually, my Commander Cunningham is perfect for comedy. I went with Martin Freeman.
Nice,
very good.
For my Max, I went with Daisy Ridley. I don't know how she'd do with comedy, but again, because she has a lot more to do in this than she does in the Bond films, I wanted somebody who could sort of lean into that the physical aspect of that role as well.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I want her this version of Moneypenny, Max, seems more like a capable field agent. And modern interpretations of Bond, specifically in the comic books and some of the new films, have made Moneypenny more of an, like, if you're going to be assisting the guy who's in charge, you should probably be very capable.
Yeah,
exactly. And then I did cast Juan. I didn't cast Melinda. Unfortunately, I forgot to cast her. But I did cast Juan because I really want that character whose wedding plans keep getting interrupted throughout the film. And so after that, I went with Sacha Baron Cohen.
Nice.
That's good.
Yeah. And then for my director, I was leaning into action comedy, not quite parody or spoof. So I went with Doug Liman, who did Mr. and Mrs. Smith and Edge of Tomorrow, because he does comedy and action quite well together. So yeah, he was my director choice. And that was it for my casting.
Nice. Jeff, want to shoot us some of your ideas here?
Yeah, this is one where I had kind of a, you know, trouble formulating what this might even be as a remake, just because, it's like, it's one of those cases where, like, who would want to spend money on making a remake of this? But so in my mind, my original thinking was you lean into the exploitativeness of it being Neil Connery, being Sean Connery's brother. And as I mentioned earlier, cast Harry Craig, who's Daniel Craig's younger brother, who doesn't have an acting career. Then basically from there, you basically would just take a list of people who have been in James Bond movies. And then you work your way from the bottom up and just cast the rest of the movie with like very low rent actors.
Yeah.
But they have a connection to Bond somehow.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you make the movie for like $10,000 and release it around the time of the next Bond movie.
Well, Neil Connery was cast because he was having a problem with his job. He was a plasterer, and I guess he was having some union issues or whatever, and he'd gone on the radio to talk about these issues, and the producers of this film heard him, and he sounds just like his brother and looks very similar as well. Although, with that rubbish beard that he's got, I kept thinking he's like the Mirror Universe version of Sean Connery. I kept thinking, like, this is just when they stuck a goatee on Spock, and his looked better.
The whole thing is like he has this Errol Flynn. Like if you look at Errol Flynn, that's kind of the same facial hair. So like it seemed like the archery thing was a bit on the nose.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, just to go back to why he was on the radio is because he lost his tools and it became like a media thing because he's Sean Connery's brother.
Mm-hmm. Oh wow!
Because of his lack of competence, they thought it was rather funny that you have this sort of working famous actor brother and you can't even keep track of your own tools.
Wow.
Yeah, and he only did wind up doing a handful of films. He was a plasterer until about his mid-40s, so I don't know what he's doing since. He's still around.
Ah.
He's up there in age now, but yeah, I have no idea what his life's been like since he retired from the plastering business.
And acting.
Yeah.
You know, can't retire from acting if we barely consider you an actor.
he had 13 roles, so that's more than some actors.
It's true.
Okay.
Did you watch the Mystery Science Theater 3000 of this, by the way?
No, I
was going to do that.
I'll intentionally stay away from that because I don't want to be swayed by other people's perspective, which is what they are doing with those. So I watched it straight. You can find this movie free on YouTube, so in its unaltered glory, but it's also free on Tubi with the Mystery Science Theater version.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. They have a lot of good things to say, but one of the bits that's pretty memorable, if you're interested in the movie, it's worth checking out. They just have a part where they take a graph and they're like, this is where Neil Connery was at this point in his life. This is where his brother Sean was at this point in his life. And it's just this graph of Sean Connery's life going up and up and Neil Connery's life going down and down.
Oh.
It's pretty funny.
Oh, no. All right.
I think if we were to do a modern remake, like what we've been talking about, though, my vote would be Daniel Craig, but with a goatee.
With him having spoken out several times about how much he just hates doing these Bond movies now, yet continues to do them because obviously the money must look really good.
Yeah.
I could see him wanting to take the piss out of it.
Oh, I think he would do it.
I think he would do it. It would be therapy for him, I think.
yeah
he
can be like, yeah, like just in this like low rent like kind of American accent, like, yeah, you know, okay.
I'll go to Malaga. American brother. I never even thought about that he has an American accent, but he's supposed to be a British spy. Yep.
Yeah, they even say this Scotch bastard at some point. Like,
yeah,
but he sounds American.
Very, very American.
Yes.
There's one point in our movie I really do want to have where he still does the lip reading thing, but it is dubbed. So I want it to be like, it looks nothing like what the person said, but he still knows what it means.
Yeah. That would be funny. Like if they're saying it and clearly if you can read lips, it is not what they're saying. That would be pretty good.
Yeah, have the actor say it in like Klingon or something like that, and then well, I don't know, because either it'd be dubbed in English, so it doesn't really matter.
It should be another like joke. If you're good enough to read what they're saying lip wise, it should be another joke that isn't what Neil Connery thinks they're saying.
It should be this doesn't fucking match in Italian.
Well, better yet, this guy thinks he can read lips, but really he just has no idea what we're actually saying.
Yes.
Look at this idiot looking through the window like we don't know he's there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Don't look.
See, that would be funny.
then he's like, they're going to kill us all.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like nice. That. I like that. Okay, we keep interrupting Jeff's casting. I'm so sorry.
Sorry.
No. Basically, the only route I could see this movie being remade was the asylum route. And then you pay people as little money as possible to be in it. But so I didn't really have any specific people other than the brother of Daniel Craig and everything else we were talking about just now. But I would still want to cast people. Like part of the fun of this movie is that it's not great, but almost does have a connection to a Bond movie. And I would want to keep as much of that as possible if it was to be remade. That's all I got.
Okay. Well, I'm sure Trish is, and I are going to really take this home. Okay, Trish, how about you go first? Okay. And because there's a good chance we'll have some crossover.
We might not. I went a very different way because I went full comedy. So for Dr. Connery, I went a very different route because you know how we were talking about like it should look nothing like the original.
Mm-hmm.
I went way as adoptive sibling. I went with Ali Wong. So it's like it's little sister.
Okay.
She's very funny, and I think it'd be really cool to watch her in this role. Like, she's tiny, but I would love to see her, like, kick some ass as a very tiny spy.
Okay, I hadn't considered that.
It kind of ruins my
you guys look exactly the same joke.
Oh, but no, it doesn't. It makes it better.
I want like, one character to think everybody's insane.
Yes.
Like, oh, wait. It should be probably one.
I do have that. It's just going to come up a little later.
Okay.
So I've got Maya Raffis. I have Rebecca Northern, who is a local actress who did Kung Fu Pandies, because I think she could be able to like help like write in some of that stuff like that Pussymobile and make it much funnier.
Okay.
Less exploitative. For Beta or Thayer, I have Alex Winter, because you can kind of do a British accent. I think it would be funny.
Mm-hmm.
And for Alpha, I have Keanu Reeves. because I think that's hilarious.
Okay.
For Mildred, I have Hannah Simone from New Girl, because I think she can do comedy. She's quite funny. She looks very similar to this actress. But I also want Mildred to last a little longer and keep losing more and more absurd things.
Right.
So she'll
I'm totally on
arc.
Board with that. You're right. She's a perfect choice for that. I'm glad you picked her.
Yay. Thank you. Commander Cunningham, Sir Ian McKellen.
Nice.
I just think that would be awesome. For Yashuko, I have Awkwafina. And what I want to do with that, Yashuko, is they keep finding many dead Yashukos who aren't and get more absurdly not looking like it, but they still think it's Yashuko.
What, because Neil Cadre kept making everybody look the same? He only has one plastic surgery model? Oh, I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
He can only do plastic like, surgery in one direction.
In only one direction. Like, yeah. this looks
Make
like
me look
no,
like this. No, no, you could look like this. This is the only picture I work from.
Exactly. This is not Yashuko. No, oh, wait. No, this is not Yashuko. No, wait. This is not Yashuko.
That's amazing.
It's like that one kid who, like, you go to school with who's really, really perfect at drawing, like, one thing and then can't draw otherwise.
Yes. Because I thought that's where the many people still think it looks the same.
Yeah, you could almost do it as a montage, because you have to have a montage in a spoof parody.
Absolutely.
Anyhow, right? So you could have that montage and have it, yeah, like be really, like you said, like where each situation is just even more and more absurd.
Yeah, and it's like, but it's still all Awkwafina, but just in different makeup.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
I'd love to see her like as an old Chinese dude with like the beard and stuff like that too.
Yeah. And they're like, this is Yashuko. No, it's not.
But they don't mention the beard or.
That's why Connery's intimately familiar with it, because it's the only thing he does.
Yeah.
He's not the one time he tried. And yeah. we'd have to pick somebody who's got famously bad like facelifts and stuff. The one time he tried.
What was that lady who had herself made into a cat?
Oh.
Have you seen this one?
That was and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, wasn't it?
No, there's like a real life lady where she's had multiple plastic surgeries to make herself look like a cat.
I mean,
it's frightening.
It's nuts in and of itself.
But
I mean,
yeah.
You could
okay,
do that with makeup.
How about the one time he tried to do something else that turned out to be Mickey Rourke?
Yes.
And then we just get Mickey Rourke.
Yeah.
And he'd do it. He would freaking do it.
He would.
Absolutely do it.
Nice.
Because he's been really open about how he knows he looks odd because of the plastic surgeries.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Okay.
Love it.
Continue.
Okay. And for Max, I actually went with Randall Park, because I made it like Ali Wong and Randall Park have like a good chemistry. Mm-hmm. So I just like the idea of just having like a kind of a weird guy Moneypenny.
Okay.
Just so they can play off each other.
Sure.
And then for Juan, I went with Javier Bardem.
Ah, finally a Bond connection.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes, because having him as just like the gopher guy, I think it would just be hilarious, because he's such a big presence.
I kept thinking like Juan was meant to be like the Felix Leiter character, but
yeah.
I want him to be like the most capable character, the one that is the... When everybody says, oh, you guys look exactly the same. And he's like, no, they fucking don't. You know, he's the guy who's our voice of reality.
Ah, and that I would like him to do that. That sounds awesome. I like this even more now.
Yeah.
Could even have him stare down the barrel of the camera being like, really?
Do you have anybody else or a director?
No, I don't. For my director, though, I have Nanochka Khan, who's done quite a bit of like television, a lot of comedy.
Okay.
And I think she could really get into this whole like absurdity.
Okay. Well, for mine, I thought part of what makes this movie work is the seriousness of casting so many actual Bond alumni. So I did try to do that in mine. I probably wasn't as successful as they were, but I do have that in mind. But I'm going to start with my director, because notoriously, if I don't, it never gets done. So I went with Shane Black, because at the time I wasn't thinking direction, but I was thinking I want enjoyable comedy. And he did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, was a great little spy movie with a lot of humor. But we're going in a little more absurd direction. So he might not be the right guy for this, but I don't know. I'm not sure who is, because nobody does this type of comedy anymore.
No.
Except for the Wayans brothers still do it from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Carell and his wife play in it quite a lot in Angie Tribeca.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, there's definitely options for doing this, and I don't know. We'll figure it out.
I think David Zucker is still alive too.
Oh yeah, ooh, there's a thought. Okay, for my Dr. Connery, I went with Nick Frost.
Ha ha ha. Love it.
Yeah, because I do want Daniel Craig to show up in this movie, unlike Sean, who refused, just to kind of add to the punchline of the joke. And he would be the younger brother. He is younger than Daniel Craig. Daniel Craig's in his mid-50s at this point. He's getting a little long in the tooth for playing Bond.
Yeah, but Roger Moore did it to his late 60s.
Yeah, he did. They've overstayed their welcome multiple times, yeah, in Bond movies. For Max, I went with Naomi Harris, who is the current Moneypenny.
Sweet.
Yes. For Commander Cunningham, otherwise known as M, Judi Dench. She would love, sweet, to take the piss out of her own character. Now, I mean, she doesn't do as much acting anymore because her sight's really bad, but she has ways of getting around it, and she's still acting, so...
Oh, she could lean into that.
She would love... Oh, yeah, she totally could, actually. She'd have a lot of fun with this, and she's not afraid to take the piss out of herself.
That actually ties into the whole...
So bad? Because her eyesight is so bad, where she leads it. The resemblance is uncanny.
Yeah, and it ties into the whole thing about the blind live and die in the factory.
Oh, yes. Right. How did we not mention that?
I've been waiting. I didn't forget. Don't worry.
Wow, Sam. Oh, that's awesome.
All these blind guys making rugs.
And being exposed to radiation.
So weird. It was just, what is happening?
Yeah.
And how many blind people are there in Spain?
Yeah. And why did Neil Connery wait to the end of the movie to hypnotize the commander to go, yeah, I'm not working for you? He could have done that at the beginning of the movie. Fuck that. Well, see, I am not the Connery you were looking for.
There's a funny joke at the beginning where he tries that to try and get out of it, and it doesn't work.
Yeah. So why did it work at the end of the movie?
He longer with certain people.
Oh, yeah, he did. I guess they did. They were careful in establishing that. You're right.
Oh, but maybe that's why it doesn't work on Judi Dench, because her eyesight is so bad.
There we go. Okay, for my alpha, I wanted a Blofeld, and there's only one still alive that's played the role, and that's Christoph Waltz.
Nice.
Okay. And honestly, if you've watched those modern Bond movies, he does feel like he's a parody of Blofeld, so yeah, let's just lean into that.
And he can do comedy, too.
Yeah, and I think he'd have a lot of fun doing comedy. And here's another guy who's not known for comedy, but probably would love to do it. My beta is Mads Mikkelsen, who is in Casino Royale.
Yes!
Okay, this is my favorite bit of casting coming up next. Mildred, who's constantly being found bent over looking for some ridiculous thing.
Okay.
And is always getting in front of Neil Connery. I don't know how she keeps getting ahead of him, but she does. I went with Megan Fox specifically from that moment of Transformers, just because she was bent over the car trunk. It's the only reason I did it.
That works for me too. That's a good choice. You and Trisha are sort of on par for choices there. I like both of them.
It is literally the thing she's famous for, is being bent over.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I like the fact you were, because you mentioned something that bugged me, was the fact that she always seemed to be getting ahead of him. And you could even have them be like on the same plane.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he's either, he doesn't notice her, or he sees her and waves at her.
Well,
and then,
of course not. He'd be looking at her ass the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she'd be bent over looking for something under the seat.
Oh, yes. She's sitting right next to him. And then when she bends over, he's like, oh, it's you again.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
I'm in tears here. Okay, well, that was my favorite bit of casting, even more so now. For Maya, I went with Palm Clementif, who played Mantis in Guardians of the Galaxy, and I gotta wipe my eyes because I can't see my own notes now. Oh, my God. But, yeah, I thought she'd be pretty good. And she's got a unique look, and I like that about Bond women. Sometimes they'll pick somebody with a unique look. For Yoshiko, I went with Jing Tian, who is in Kong, Skull Island, and Pacific Rim 2.
Nice.
For Juan, and this leans into the capable spy, and always wondering what the hell's going on with everybody else, Diego Luna from Star Wars Rogue One.
Nice.
Now, another one of my favorite bit of castings. This took longer than everybody else combined because I was trying to find that person who would play Lotta. And we've had two people that look alike. And I'm like, oh, God. And I want somebody with that same look. Or at least somebody we could push into that look. And it took a long time. I actually had to run actors' faces through facial recognition to make this work. So I ran the original through facial recognition. I'm like, which actor do I look like? So I ran the original actor who played the character from Russia to Love through a filter. And then all these actresses came up. And it resulted in Frances McDormand from Three Billboards.
Cool.
And Fargo. And you can think, like, you pull her hair back and give her the glasses, especially the way she looks now. Yeah. And
the right haircut, yeah.
And the right haircut, yeah. It would work.
Yep.
And she's not particularly tall or anything either. So I'm like, this, holy shit. I had to use technology to get there, but I got there.
You went above and beyond with that casting.
I did. That one, I was bound and fucking determined to get that one. So yeah, that's my casting. I made lots of connections to Bond because I felt like that adds to the legitimacy of it all. Oh, actually one I didn't write down because I did want it a Q. We now have a U. Let's bring back John Cleese.
Nice.
Who?
Very nice.
Yep. Who actually did play Q. And it would be more suited for a comedy of this sort.
Oh yeah, and he does Morose so well too.
He does. Yes. Yeah.
And I mean, given that he's well into his, I think, into his 80s, maybe 90s now. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that he's old and and his life's work is constantly being resold. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
destroyed.
Oh, yeah. Resold or destroyed. Like, it's all, I mean, all this work always seems to come for naught.
Like, he's been working on all of this stuff since like the 70s. And he's invented so many things that everybody else has become like billionaires off of. But he's just like working for his government job.
Oh. That's so heartbreaking.
Perfect.
but I kind of love it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's comedy gold all naturally in this movie that you just grab onto and just dial it up a little bit, and you've got it. But we've added some good layers as well to fill in some of it, I think. Plot-wise, stick with it. I mean, the stupider the plot, the better it works. So like, let's show what using the Earth as an electromagnet would actually do, and that would be fun. It'd probably be fairly expensive, but...
Yeah, but that's the whole point. These guys somehow have enough money to do this shit.
Yeah.
We don't know why.
You know, you could just make it. They turn the moon into an electromagnet, and then they build special guns that are not made out of metal, so they'll be the only ones with guns.
Oh, the plastic
when you turn the moon magnet on.
Moon magnets.
Or maybe all of their guns are made of gold.
I kept thinking there would be a gold finger reference or something. That would be a good way, because you'd want to reference a lot of the 60s and 70s Bond movies, especially those original ones. If you're going to spoof Bond movies, then you want to have those famous segments with the laser between the legs and painting somebody gold and all that fun stuff. Like, let's do it.
Wow. Oh, you know, if it's Goldfinger?
He is a surgeon, so.
Yeah.
He is. And here's part of it. It could be like Goldfinger isn't called that because he just has a big thing about gold. He just has a digit specific jaundice.
There you go.
He has one yellow finger. And he needs a plastic surgeon to help him fix it.
We need to give Neil Connery like more useless things he's perfect at. whoever our guy
is. He knows how to poach an egg perfectly. That's very hard.
He can count cards, but only up to 40.
I like that.
He's won numerous voguing competitions when he was 20.
Nice. He can ride a unicycle, but only a very, very tall one.
He can tie his shoes in more than one way.
Yeah, he's mastered over 1,000 different shoelace.
He can get a woman out of a set of Spanx in less than 10 minutes.
Well, that would be a skill for a spy.
Yes.
he can rewire anything, but only if it's manufactured by this one European company
that's been out of business for 30 years.
I love it.
Oh,
there just happens to be the security doors on this secret base.
Or it also happens to be the place that built those big phones that can't be hacked.
There you go.
Yeah, that works. But yeah, and they could all kind of play into the whole idea, like the being able to lace his shoes in a thousand different ways. It comes in handy when he gets at the factory, right?
Yeah, like he can undo the knots.
He's a master safecracker, but only with a foam finger.
I was thinking about the lip reading, and it could be that he's a master of lip reading, but only 500 phrases.
And for some reason, one of them is, we're going to blow up the boat with everyone on it.
He can't read it because they say, we're going to blow up the boat with everybody in it. He can't quite make out what they're saying.
They're going to blow up the boat and something about people in it.
No, it's like one of those, when kids learn how to read by recognizing what a whole word looks like and not how to read phonetically. It's like it only makes sense as the whole package. Can't pick it apart.
That we have to give him like a skiing scene, but he doesn't know how to ski, an underwater scene, but he can't swim.
Yes.
Yeah, like he can hold his breath for 12 minutes, but only if he's not underwater.
Nice.
That is the best one. I love that so much. He's afraid of fish, but not sharks.
That's oddly specific. Does that apply to you, Trish?
Yeah.
Okay.
She just took one of her own.
Last time I went shark diving, the only time I got bit was this little bastard fish that was just angry at me multiple times on all my fingers.
He's like, hey, don't you know that there's a big dangerous animal right there? I'm trying to save your life.
Oh, no. I had my hand on his rock, and he was real mad about that.
Aw.
I have a picture of him, the fury in this tiny little fish's eyes.
Fish fury.
It really was.
Worked hard for that rock.
He did.
Okay, any last thoughts about OK Connery?
It was okay.
Oh, I was waiting for somebody to go there.
Nice. Yeah, you knew it wasn't going to be me.
You were hoping it worked way to okay?
Yeah.
This does not review well, as you would expect. Reviews were like 3.5 out of 10 on IMDb. There weren't even enough reviews on Rotten Tomatoes for a critic score, but the audience score, take a wild stab.
23%.
Okay, we got 23, Jeff.
Oh, I'm surprised that there's enough people reviewing this movie to register a score. Let's say 13.
Okay, well, I think Trish was the one who got closest at 19% is...
I won one!
But man, get your friends together, watch this. I think Sam would have enjoyed that if we all had been in the same room together.
Oh, you know what? It is a crowd movie where you can Mystery Science Theater it and just mock the hell out of it, because it is eminently mockable.
Yeah.
Yeah, or have a friend with a very large back and just... projected on them.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Once you hit that first fight scene and he hypnotizes one of the attackers, I mean, you're on a whole other level there.
Yeah, it was funny because I was partway in the movie, probably about 25, 30 minutes in the movie, and Val came downstairs. She goes, so how is it? I'm like, I don't know. I think I hate it. And then she says, what's it about? I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah,
that was by that point I had no idea what was going on anymore.
I took a long time. I think I was three quarters of this movie before I actually knew what the fuck was going on.
Yeah,
and even some character names. I was just like, "What is happening? Why is anybody doing anything here?" Like the auction, what Beta's at, and it's just he's so cocky to outbid people. He lets people bid, and then he just fucking crushes them. And then out comes his boss to crush him. I'm like, what was that about? That's just establishing. I mean, I know what that's about now. It was to establish the rivalry that the two had. But at the time, you're like, what the fuck?
It's so funny because he bids it up to $900,000 and then is walking out the room. And then the person who wins bids $905,000 and then wins immediately. It's very funny.
Yeah.
For me, it was the hypnosis thing. When that first came out, I'm like, oh, this is what's going to happen now.
Yeah, when they introduced the hypnosis thing, I'm like, oh my God.
Oh, yeah, that first scene, by the way, when he was hypnotizing her in his room, I was like, I do not like where this is going.
Right?
Right?
It felt very, very creepy.
Yes.
Oh, you know what? Oh, sorry. That reminds me of something else I was going to do with the whole thing. You owe me like a reward each time. I want it to not be like a kiss or something. I want to be like $20. I like that hat. Like, I want a pizza. I want to be nothing to do with that. And she keeps being like, oh, she goes in for the kiss. He's like, no, I want this.
Yeah, see, I do want them to like to get close. Maybe he leans in like he's going to kiss her. And then he says what he wants. It's like, I like that hat. And then touches her hat.
Yeah. Oh, no, just takes her hat.
Yeah. Even better, yes.
I like that. No, that would work really well. Nick Frost, who's just ambivalent to the come-ons.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the idea of him being almost like an anti-ladies man.
Yeah.
Yes. Right?
It's not that he's not capable. He just doesn't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And women are still unnaturally drawn to him because they all think he looks like one of the Bonds. But at the same time, he's like, this has been happening all my life. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know what? I feel like a good introduction to this character would be a high-stakes poker game. But he's like terrible at poker.
Oh, yeah. That's another Bond trope. You got to throw as many tropes in these as you can.
No, high stakes Uno.
Oh, yeah. Of course, it can't be poker. It's got to be something ridiculous.
Yeah. No, I like high stakes Uno, yeah.
Oh, is it casino? It's high stakes Uno and high stakes Battleship.
Yeah, they should all be like board games. Like all these strategy board games.
Have licensing. You could do like high stakes cribbage.
Nice.
Well, remember in Never Say Never Again, the remake of Thunderball. And they basically are playing like Battleship, but
yeah,
with consequences.
With consequences, yes.
They could ask about high stakes Monopoly, or like, no, that's just life. We don't play that here.
I like that. That's a good yes.
Yeah, we're the bad guys. We don't make legitimate purchases.
No. Oh, high stakes Cards Against Humanity. I'm pretty sure we could get them on board.
Yeah, more than likely. Well, that was OK Conry. And I think we have some comedy gold here. I really do. Yeah.
The movie was OK, but I think our remake is awesome.
Yeah, we've talked about these absurd comedies before and why they go away is because they'll make them quick and cheap and not worry about plot so much. But adding a plot is kind of what makes them work. That's why we had Three Naked Guns.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why the Austin Powers movies work too. And I wanted to bring that up before I forgot. Mm-hmm. Forget actually is we have to. One of the things you have to be very careful with is not sort of rehashing what they've done. And I think we've done a good job of not doing that because we've leaned more into the really spoofy comedy. And I mean, whereas Austin Powers is more parody, and there is a difference.
Yeah.
So and I think by moving it to modern times, but not having him out of time also helps.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And I think there's some elements when I was watching this movie, I swear some of it was put into Austin Powers.
I agree. Yeah.
You can definitely see how this movie was an influence on all three of those movies.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Or the writers had very similar ideas because some of it is also clearly just absurd that they've walked straight into that same pathway, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm wondering what our fans think. Have you seen OK Conry? Let us know if you have. And do you want us to cover some other non-Bond movie spy movies? I love them. So maybe throw a few more at us. And you can do that by messaging us and following us at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and invasionoftheremake@gmail.com if you want to email us your suggestions, your corrections, and your comments, and especially your fan challenges. We've kind of haven't done a lot lately, but I do have a little list. We are going to get to them, but we've got only a short amount of time before we get into all the horror episodes and our 31 Days of Horror as well. Don't forget to check out and follow at All the Horror 18 and All the Horror over on Facebook, because that event, it's the third year of this massive crossover between all sorts of podcasts. There's going to be different podcasts dropping every single day. So follow them on their social medias and hey, go support them over on their Tee Public store as well. Their sales go to Scares That Care, a well worth effort charity. So go find some of them and buy a t-shirt or a mask or something to support a great worthwhile effort. But yeah, we're going to be part of the All the Horror again in October and having some guests come in along the way. And of course, you know, we're going to be doing horror all month long in October, and we're going to be watching a different horror movie every single day. That's going to be part of our 31 Days of Horror specials at the beginning of November. And if you want to join us in that challenge, just send us your lists. Now, you don't have to do it the way we do it. We're watching a horror movie a day we've never seen before, and the more you do it, the trickier it gets. But you can just give us your lists if you have your Halloween favorites. We're not going to tell you what to watch, what not to watch. I guess we do that every week, but but we're interested to see your lists. And if you've done the horror challenge start to finish, we will try to read a few of them out on those episodes. And of course, make sure you tell your friends and family about the show. If they're not listening, hey, what's wrong with you? Get them on it, because we've been doing this for five into our sixth year now, and there's tons of content for you to imbibe in and gorge in.
Yes.
At this point, it's a gluttonous bounty of podcasting goodness.
Nom, 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 nom.
Yes. Tell them where to find it. We're on all your favorite podcatchers at this point. So go check us out. Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, even Amazon Music now, and Audible. So we're literally everywhere, guys.
Oh, I have to add those to the site.
There you go. And Sam, since you have to add some stuff to the website.
See what I did there?
I did. That is one of the greatest accidental segues ever. Tell them where this central hub is.
It is invasionoftheremake.wixsite.com/podcast.
And you'll be able to find a nice master list of lots of podcast platforms you can find us on. And all the episodes are there with links to the top six or whatever that you can click on there. We're no longer posting full episodes on YouTube. So if you have a subscription there, well, you're probably not hearing this message. But hopefully you will find us on one of those other platforms. Okay. Well, yeah. Speaking of our Tee Public store, which I wasn't, but I should, because we have some cool stuff on our Tee Public store. We've got masks and mugs and pillows and, of course, T-shirts of some cool stuff. And with 31 Days of Horror right around the corner, if you made it through, I think you deserve a reward. And that should be I Survived 31 Days of Horror in 3 wonderful designs, and you can get them in lots of different styles as well, with the front and back logo or just the front logo. You can get them in lots of shirt designs as well, hoodies. Yeah, you deserve to be rewarded for being a trooper. So get a I Survived a 31 Days of Horror shirt. But there's other shirts there as well. You could be that person that you saw in that thing the one time. That's a good one. Or you just buy our logo. Hopefully, when we got a couple more designs, we will be launching the Omega Collection soon, and those are going to look great. I'm looking forward to seeing how that's going to look on a shirt and masks and mugs and all sorts of stuff. So always check back, because there's sales going on regularly over at Tee Public. There's one, as we're recording, going on, but of course, by the time you hear this, it'll be 2 weeks later. So hopefully there'll be another one going on when you listen to it.
Mm-hmm. There's one every weekend in September, actually.
Oh, there you go.
Ah.
So there's a couple more weeks in September. You make sure, if you haven't signed up for Tee Public, just get the alerts and you'll know when a sale pops up and you're like, all right, now's the time I'm going to pop on that t-shirt or that mask. Right now, you kind of need the masks.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you might as well make a good fashion statement while you're doing it.
Oh, they're stylish. Wonderful.
And they do look really cool.
They really do. They really do. I'm pretty proud of what we've got up there, and more coming very soon. Okay, well, next week we're back to doing a comparison. Until then, I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
I continue to be Trish.
And I am Jeff Omega.
And we are out of here.
Ward had important information he wanted to sell us. Unfortunately, he was killed before he got it to us.
Actually, Ward asked us to protect Jashuko because he'd given her some secret information, and he was afraid she might be in danger. Now, she denies this, absolutely. And I'm inclined to think she's telling the truth.
But we can't find any explanation to this business.
Then I'll explain it to you. Ward had learned a special yogi technique, quite complicated, but very effective. Briefly, it's very possible to communicate any data to a subject in a state of hypnosis of total recall. The subject himself doesn't know he knows, but he would be able to repeat verbatim if he was again hypnotized to the same extent.
But do you mean that's how Ward Jones...
Precisely. It's clear Ward used Jashuko as a human electronic brain, a sort of impregnable safe to keep his secrets in.
A safe that you know how to open, of course.
I'm sorry, but I can't help you. I'll be too busy for the next few days.
Why, Doctor? All you have to do is to walk around Monte Carlo for the next few days until the police decide to let you go.
And if I help you out, you'll get me out. Is that what you mean?
Freedom always has a price tag attached to it.